why do you tell us that you do not know anything about this place, and then you walk through it like you have lived here your whole life?"
Richard blinked at the question. His eyes suddenly went wide with the realization.
"Because of you. Me."
"Yes," Richard said in astonishment. "By talking to me, you distracted my conscious mind. You had me so intent on the things you were saying and on thinking about them that it let my gift guide me. I never even realized it as it was happening. Now that I've been through this way, I know the dangers and the way back. I can get back now."
He squeezed her shoulder.
"Thank you, Berdine." She grinned.
"What are friends for?"
"I think we're through the worst. This way." At the end of the gold tunnel was a round tower room, at least 100 feet across, with stairs spiraling up around the inside of the outer wall. At irregular intervals, small landings interrupted the steps at doors. In the gloomy expanse above, shafts of light pierced the darkness. Most of the windows above were small, but one looked huge. Richard couldn't tell for sure how far the tower rose, but it had to be close to 200 feet. Below, the circular shaft descended into dank obscurity.
"I don't like the looks of it," Berdine said, as she peered over the edge of the iron rail at the landing. "This looks like the worst of it to me."
Richard thought he saw something move in the murk below.
"Stay close and keep your eyes open."
He fixed his gaze on the spot where he thought he had seen movement, trying to see it again.
"If anything happens, you have to try to get out."
Berdine glanced with disapproval over the railing.
"Lord Rawl, it has taken us hours to get down here. We have been through more shields than I can remember. If anything happens to you, I am dead too."
Richard considered his options. It might be better if he were cloaked in his Mrithwith cape. "You wait here. I'll go have a look."
Berdine snatched his shirt at his shoulder and yanked him around to face her fiery blue eyes. "No, you will not go alone."
"Berdine,
I am your protector. You will not go alone. Is that understood?"
She had that penetrating iron look in her eyes that made his tongue fear a mistake. He finally let out a breath.
"All right.
But you stay close and do as I say." She cocked her head.
"I always do as you say."
Chapter 37.
As his horse swayed under him, Tobias Brogan idly watched the Creator's 5 messengers walking not far ahead and off to one side. It was unusual to see them. Since they had unexpectedly appeared 4 days earlier, they were always around, but rarely seen, and even when they were visible they were still hard to see, being all white like the snow, or when it was dark, all black like the night. He marveled at the way they were able to simply vanish before his eyes. The Creator's power was indeed miraculous. His choice of messengers, though, left Tobias uneasy. The Creator had told Tobias in his dreams not to question his plans, and thankfully had finally accepted Tobias's supplications of forgiveness for the effrontery of an inquiry. All right-minded children feared the Creator, and Tobias Brogan was nothing if not right-minded. Still, scaled creatures hardly seemed the appropriate choice to carry divine guidance. He suddenly straightened in his saddle. Of course, the Creator wouldn't want to reveal his intentions to the profane by letting them see disciples who looked the part. Evil would expect the beauty and glory of the Creator to hound them, but would not be spooked to go to ground at the sight of disciples in this guise. Tobias let out a relieved sigh as he watched the Mrithwith leaning in, conferring with one another, and with the sorceress in whispers. She called herself a Sister of the Light, but she was still a sorceress, a Streganicha, a witch. He could understand the Creator using the Mrithwith as messengers, but he couldn't understand why he would give Streganicha such authority. Tobias wished he knew what they had to talk about all the time. Ever since the Streganicha had joined them the day before, she had kept company almost exclusively with the 5 scaled creatures, having precious few words for the Lord General of the Blood of the Fold. 6 of them kept to themselves, as if they only happened to be traveling the same direction as Tobias and his company of 1,000. Tobias had seen but a handful of the Mrithwith dispatch hundreds of Dharan soldiers, and so felt less uneasy about only having 2/5 of his men with him. The rest of his force of over 100,000 of the Fold waited a little more than a week out of Adendrill. Tobias had been told by the Creator, when he had come in a dream that first night with his army, that they were to remain behind to participate in the conquest of Adendrill. "Lunetta," he said in a quiet tone, as he watched the sister gesticulating in her conversation with the Mriswith. She stepped her horse closer to his right side. She took his cue and kept her voice low.
"Yes, my lord general."
"Lunetta, have you seen the sister use her power?"
"Yes, lord general, when she moved the windfall from our way."
"Could you tell her power from that?" Lunetta gave him a slight nod. "Does she have the power you do, my sister?"
"No, Tobias."
He smiled over at her.
"That'd be good to know."
He glanced around to make sure no one was near and the six were still visible.
"I am becoming puzzled by some of the things the Creator has been telling me in the last few nights." "Do you wish to tell Lunetta?"
"Yes, but not now. We'll talk about it later." She idly stroked her pretties.
"Perhaps when we can be alone. It'd be time to stop soon."
Tobias didn't miss the demure smile or the offer. "We'll not be stopping early tonight." He lifted his nose as he took a deep whiff of the cold air.
"She's so close I can almost smell her."
Richard counted the landings on his way down so he would be able to find their way back. He thought he could remember the rest of it because of the sights along the way, but the inside of the tower was disorienting. It smelled of rot, like a deep bog, probably because water that came in the open windows collected in the bottom. At the next landing platform, Richard saw a shimmering to the air as he approached. In the light coming from the globe he was holding, he could see something standing to the side. Its edges glowed in the humming light. Though the thing wasn't solid, he recognized it as a Mriswith standing with its cape drawn around itself.
"Welcome, skin brother,"
it hissed. Bardeen flinched.
"What was that?" she whispered urgently.
Richard got hold of her wrist as she tried to put herself in front of him. She had her Ajeel in her fist and pulled her to the other side of him as he continued on.
"It's just a Mriswith." "Mriswith?" she whispered in a hoarse tone. "Where?"
"Right here on the landing, by the rail. Don't be afraid, it won't hurt you." She clutched his black cape after he forced down her arm with the Ajeel. They stepped onto the landing.
"Have you come to wake the Slif?"
the Mriswith asked. Richard frowned. "Slif?" The Mriswith opened its cape to point with a three-bladed knife in its claw down the stairs. When it did so, it became solid and fully visible, a figure of dusky scales and cape.
"The Slif is down there, skin brother."
Its beady eyes came back up.
"She is accessible at last. Soon it will be time for the Yabri to sing."
"Yabri?" The Mriswith lifted its three-bladed knife and gave it a little wiggle. Its slit of a mouth widened into sort of a smile.
"Yabri. When the Yabri sing, it will be the time of the queen."
"The queen?"
"The queen needs you, skin brother. You must help her."
Richard could feel Berdine trembling as she pressed against him. He decided that he should be going before she became too frightened and started down the steps. Two landings down, she was still hanging on to him.
"It's gone,"
she whispered in his ear. Richard looked back up and saw that she was right. Berdine muscled him into the recess of a doorway, flattening his back up against a wood door. Her penetrating blue eyes were intense with agitation.
"Lord Rawl, that was a Mriswith,"
Richard nodded, a little puzzled by her ragged panting.
"Lord Rawl, Mriswith kill people. You always kill them."
Richard lifted a hand toward the landing above.
"It wasn't going to hurt us. I told you that. It didn't attack us, did it? There was no need to harm it."
Her brow furrowed with concern.
"Lord Rawl, are you all right?"
"I'm fine. Now, come on. Maybe the Mriswith gave us a good hint of what we might be looking for."
She shoved him back against the door when he tried to move.
"Why did it call you skin brother?"
"I don't know. I guess because it has scales and I have skin. I think it called me that to let me know it meant no harm. It wanted to help."
"Help?"
she repeated incredulously. "It didn't try to stop us, did it?" She finally let go of his shirt, but it took longer for her blue eyes to release their hold on him. At the bottom of the tower, a walkway with an iron railing ringed the outside wall of the tower. In the center lurked black water with rocks breaking the surface in several places. Salamanders clung to the stone below the walkway and rested partially submerged at the rocks. Insects swam through the thick, inky water, skittering around bubbles that occasionally ascended to release rings as they burst. Halfway around the walkway, Richard knew he had found what he was looking for. Something not ordinary, like the libraries, or even the strange rooms and corridors. A wide platform in the walkway, before where a door had been, was littered with sooty stone fragments, chips, and dust. Chunks of wood from the door now floated in the dark water beyond the iron railing. The doorway itself had been blown away, and was now perhaps twice its previous size. The jagged edges were blackened, and in some places the stone itself was melted like candle wax. Twisting streaks on the stone wall ran off in every direction away from the blasted hole, as if lightning had flailed against the wall and burned it.
"This is not old," Richard said, running his finger through the black soot.
"How can you tell?" Bernine asked as she peered about.
"Look, see here? The mold and slime have been burned away, scoured right off the rock, and haven't had time to grow back. This happened recently, sometime within the last few months."
The room inside was round, perhaps 60 feet across. Its walls scorched in ragged lines as if lightning had gone wild in the place. A circular stone wall took up the center, like a huge well, nearly half the width of the room. Richard leaned over the waist-high wall, holding out the glowing globe. The smooth stone walls of the hole fell away forever. He could see the stone for hundreds of feet before the light failed to penetrate farther. It looked bottomless. Above was a domed ceiling, nearly as high as the room was wide. There were no windows or other doors. To the far side, Richard could see a table and a few shelves. When they rounded the well, he saw the body, lying on the floor beside a chair. All that was left were bones inside a few scraps of cloth robes. Most of the robes had long ago rotted away, leaving the skeleton encircled by just a leather belt. Sandals remained too. When he touched the bones, they crumbled like baked dirt.
"He has been here a very long time," Bernine said.
"You're right about that."
"Lord Rawl, look."
Richard stood and looked to the table where she pointed. There was an inkwell, dry for perhaps centuries, a pen to the side, and an open book. Richard leaned over and blew a cloud of dust and stone chips from the book.
"It's in High Daharan," he said, as he held it up next to the glowing sphere.
"Let me see."
Her eyes moved from side to side as she studied the strange characters.
"You're right.
What does it say?"
She carefully took the book in both hands.
"This is very old. The dialect is older than any I have ever seen. Darkin Rawl showed me an old dialect that he said was over 2,000 years old."
She looked up.
"This is older.
Can you read it?"
"I could only understand a bit of the book we found when we came in the keep."
She considered the last page with writing on it.
"I understand much less of this,"
she said as she turned some of the pages back. Richard gestured impatiently.
"Well, can you understand any of it?"
She stopped turning and scrutinized the writing.
"I think it says something about finally having success, but that success means he would die here,"
she pointed.
"See? Draka. That word is the same, I think. Death."
Bernine looked at the blank leather cover, then turned back through the book, scanning the pages. Her blue eyes came up at last.
"I think it's a journal. I think this is the journal of the man who died in here."
Richard felt goosebumps dance up his arms.
"Bernine, this is what I was looking for. This is something not ordinary, not a book others have seen, like in the library. Can you translate it?"
"A bit, perhaps, but not much."
Her features sagged with disappointment.
"I'm sorry, Lord Rawl. I just don't know dialects this old. It's the same problem I would have with the book we saw at first. I don't know enough of the words to be able to fill in the blanks correctly. I would only be guessing."
Richard pinched his lower lip as he thought. He looked down at the bones, wondering what this wizard had been doing in this room, and what had kept it sealed, and worse yet, what had unsealed it. Richard twisted back to her.
"Bernine, that book upstairs.
I know that book. I know the story.
If I helped you, telling you what I remember of what it says, could that help you decipher the words, and then use those translated words to help translate this journal?"
As she considered, her face brightened.
"If we work together, it might. If you could tell me what a sentence says, then I would be able to know the meaning of words I don't recognize. We might be able to do it."
Richard carefully closed the journal.
You hold on to this with your life. I'll hold the light. Let's get out of here. We have what we came for.
When he and Berdin came through the doorway, Kara and Reyna practically leapt out of their skin with relief. Richard even saw Ulik and Egan close their eyes with a sigh and a silent thank you to the good spirits for a prayer answered.
There are Mriswith in the keep,
Berdin told the other two women at their tumbling questions. Kara gasped.
How many did you have to kill, Lord Rall?
None. They didn't attack us. We weren't in danger from them. But there were enough other dangers. He waved off her furious questions. We'll talk about it later. With Berdin's help, I found what I was looking for. He tapped the journal in Berdin's hand. We need to get back and start translating it. He picked up the book from the table and gave it to Berdin. As he started for the doorway out, he stopped and turned back to Kara and Reyna. While I was down there, and I was thinking that I could be killed if I did something wrong, it came to me that I didn't want to die without telling you two something. Richard put his hands in his pockets as he stepped closer. I realized when I was down there that I never told you that I was sorry for the way I treated you both.
You did not know Berdin was under a spell, Lord Rall, Kara said. We don't blame you for wanting to keep us all at arm's length.
I didn't know Berdin was under a spell, but I do now. And I want you to know that I wrongly thought ill of you. You never gave me cause. I'm sorry. I hope you can forgive me. Smiles warmed Kara and Reyna's faces. He didn't think they had ever looked less like Mord Sith than at that moment.
We forgive you, Lord Rall, Kara said.
Reyna nodded her agreement.
Thank you.
What happened down there, Lord Rall?
Reyna asked.
We had a talk about friendship, Berdin answered.
At the base of the Keep Road, where the city of Adendrill started and other roads joined to come into the city, stood a small market, nothing like the one on Stentor Street, but it looked to serve those arriving with a variety of goods. As Richard was moving past, with his five bodyguards around him and his escort of troops marching behind, something caught his eye in the fading light, and he came to a halt before a small, rickety table.
Would you like one of your honey cakes, Lord Rall?
A small, familiar voice asked. Richard smiled down at the little girl.
How many do you still owe me?
The girl turned.
Grandmama?
The old woman rose to her feet, clutching the tattered blanket to herself as her faded blue eyes fixed on Richard.
My, my, she said with a grin, showing the gaps from missing teeth. Lord Rall can have as many as he wants, dear.
She bowed her head.
So good to see you well, my Lord Rall.
You too.
He waited for her name.
Baldora, she said.
She stroked a hand down the little girl's light brown hair.
And this is Holly.
Pleased to see you again, Baldora and Holly. What are you doing here instead of Stentor Street? Baldora shrugged under her blanket.
With the new Lord Rall making the city safe, more people are coming all the time, and perhaps there will even be activity at the Wizard's Keep once again. We hope to catch some of these new people.
Well, I don't think I'd put my hopes in the Keep thriving again any time soon, but you will certainly have first chance at those come new to Adendrill. Richard surveyed the cakes on her table. How many do I still have coming? Baldora chuckled.
I would have a lot of baking to do to catch up with what we owe you, Lord Rall.
Richard winked at her. Tell you what, if I could have one each for these five friends of mine and one for myself, we will bargain it as even. Baldora's gaze passed over his five guards. She bowed her head again.
Done, Lord Rall. You have brought me more satisfaction than you could know.
Chapter 38.
As Verna hurried toward the gate to the prelate's compound, she noticed Kevin Andelmere standing guard in the darkness. She was impatient to get to the sanctuary, to tell Anne that she had at last figured it out, and she now knew almost every one of the sisters loyal to the light, but she hadn't seen Kevin in weeks. Despite her heart-pounding rush, she stopped.
Kevin, is that you?
The young soldier bowed.
Yes, prelate.
I haven't seen you around for quite a time, have I?
No, prelate. Bolsden Walsh and I were called back to our command.
Why?
Kevin shifted his weight.
I'm not sure exactly. My commander was curious about the spell over the palace, I think. I've known him for near to 15 years, and he's aged. He wanted to see with his own eyes if it were true that we hadn't. He said Bolsden Walsh and I looked the same as we did when he first saw us 15 years ago. He said he had doubted it when he heard it said, but he believed it now. He had his commanders, who knew us, come look for themselves.
Verna felt her forehead break out with beads of perspiration. With a cold wash of understanding, she knew why the Emperor was coming to the Palace of the Prophets. She had to tell the prelate. There was no time to lose.
Kevin,
Are you a loyal soldier of the Empire, the Imperial Order?
Kevin slid his hand up on his pike. His voice hesitated.
Yes, prelate. I mean, when the Order conquered my homeland, I had little choice. I was made a soldier in the Order. I fought for a time up north, near the wilds. Then, when the Order took over our kingdom, I was told I was a soldier for the Order and assigned to the palace. Can't get a better guard job than this. I'm glad to be back guarding your compound. Bolsden and Walsh are glad to be back, too, to their posts at the Prophet's compound. My officers have always treated me decent, at least, and I always get paid. It's not much, but it always comes, and I see plenty of people who have no work and have a hard time eating. Verna put a gentle hand to his arm.
Kevin, what do you think of Richard?
Richard? A grin came over his face. I liked Richard. He bought me expensive chocolates for me to give my lady.
Is that all he means to you, chocolates?
He scratched his eyebrow. No, I didn't mean it that way. Richard was a good man.
Do you know why he bought you those chocolates?
Because he was nice, he cared about people. Verna nodded.
Yes, he did. He hoped that by giving you chocolates, when the time came for him to escape, it would make you see him as a friend and keep you from fighting him so he wouldn't have to kill you. He didn't want you as an enemy trying to kill him.
Kill him? Prelate, I would never have.
If he hadn't been kind to you, you might have been loyal to the palace first and tried to stop him.
He glanced to the ground. I've seen him use his sword. I guess the gift was more than chocolates.
That it was. Kevin, if a time comes and you have to choose, Richard or the Order, which would you choose?
His face twisted in discomfort. Prelate, I'm a soldier. He let out a groan. But Richard is a friend. I guess that if I had to, I'd be hard-pressed to raise a weapon against a friend. Any of the palace guard would be. They all like him. She squeezed his arm.
Be loyal to your friends, Kevin, and you will be all right. Be loyal to Richard, and it will save you.
He nodded. Thank you, prelate, but I don't fear I will have to choose.
Kevin, listen to me. The Emperor is an evil man.
Kevin didn't say anything.
You just remember that, and keep my words to yourself, will you?
Yes, prelate. As Verna marched into her outer office, Phoebe came halfway out of her chair when she saw her.
Good evening, prelate.
I have to pray for guidance, Phoebe. No visitors. Something Kevin had said abruptly snagged in her mind. It didn't make sense.
Guards Bolsden and Walsh have been assigned to the Prophet's compound. We don't have a Prophet.
Find out why they're there and who ordered it, and give me a report first thing in the morning. Verna shook a finger.
First thing. Verna.
Phoebe sank back into her chair and looked down to her desk. Sister Dulcinea turned her white face away, putting her attention to her reports.
Verna, there are some sisters here to see you. They wait inside.
I gave no one permission to wait in my office. Phoebe didn't look up.
I know, prelate, but...
I'll see to this. Thank you, Phoebe. Verna was masked in a furious scowl as she stormed into her office. No one was allowed in her office without her explicit permission. She didn't have time to waste with nonsense. She had figured out how to tell the Sisters of the Light from the Sisters of the Dark, and she knew why Emperor Jigang was coming to Tanamura, to the Palace of the Prophets. She had to send a message to Anne. She had to know what she was to do. She saw the figures of four women in the dark room as she closed the distance.
What is the meaning of this?
Verna recognized Sister Leoma as she stepped forward into the candlelight. And then, in a blinding flash of pain, the world went black.
Do as I say, Nathan.
He leaned down toward her, quite a distance considering their difference in height, and gnashed his teeth.
You could at least give me access to my Han. How can I protect you?
Anne watched in the darkness as the column of 500 men followed the Lord Rawl up the street.
I don't want you to protect me. We can't take the chance. You know what to do. You must not interfere until he has rescued me, or we won't have a chance of capturing one so dangerous.
What if he doesn't rescue you? Anne tried not to think of that possibility. She tried not to think of what was going to happen, even if events took the correct fork.
Must I now lecture a prophet on prophecy? You must let it happen. Afterward, I will remove the block. Now, take the horses to a stable for the night. Make sure they are well fed.
Nathan snatched the reins from her. Have it your way, woman. He turned back. You had better hope that I never get this collar off, or we are going to have a very long talk. You won't be able to do a proper job of holding up your end of the conversation, though, because you will be bound and gagged at the time.
Anne chuckled.
Nathan, you're a good man. I trust in you. You must trust in me.
He shook a finger at her.
If you get yourself killed...
I know, Nathan.
He growled.
And they say I'm the one who is mad.
He turned back to her.
At least you could get yourself something to eat. You haven't eaten all day. There's a market just over there. Promise me you will at least have something to eat.
I'm not...
Promise me. Anne sighed.
All right, Nathan. If it will make you happy, I will have something to eat. But I'm not very hungry.
He lifted a finger in admonition.
I said, I promise. Now go on.
After he had finally stormed off with the horses, she proceeded on toward the keep. Her stomach churned with the fear of walking into a prophecy blind. She didn't like the idea of going to the keep again, but she liked it even less considering the prophecy involved. Still, she had to do this. It was the only way.
Honey cake, ma'am? They're only a penny and quite good.
Anne looked down at a little girl in a big coat standing behind a rickety table.
Honey cake.
Well, she hadn't promised what she would eat. A honey cake would do. Anne smiled at the pretty face.
All alone out here at night?
The girl turned and pointed.
No, m'lady. My grandmama is here with me.
A squat woman was curled up, all covered over in a tattered blanket, apparently asleep. Anne fished around in a pocket and pulled out a coin.
A silver for you, my dear. You look to need it more than I. Oh, thank you, m'lady.
She pulled a honey cake from under the table.
Please, take this one. It's one of the special ones, with the most honey. I save them for the nicest people who stop at my stand.
Anne smiled as she took the honey cake.
Well, thank you, my dear.
As Anne started up the road to the keep, the little girl began packing up her things. Anne savored the sweet honey cake as she eyed the people milling about the small market, looking for one who would be trouble. She didn't see any who looked dangerous, but she knew one was. She put her attention back to the road. What would be, would be. She wondered if it would really ease the anxiety if she knew how it would come. Probably not. In the darkness, no one saw her take the road to the keep, and at last she was alone. She wished Nathan were with her, but in a way it was nice to be alone at last, if only for a brief time. It did give her time, without Nathan's presence, to think about her life and what changes this would mean. So many years. In a way, what she was doing was like condemning to death those she loved. What choice had she? She licked her fingers clean when she finished the honey cake. It hadn't settled her stomach, and she had hoped it would. By the time she crossed under the iron portcullis, her stomach was in churning turmoil. What was wrong with her? She had faced dangers before. Maybe as she got older she found life more precious, and held on more tenaciously, fearing to let it slip. By the time she lit a candle inside the keep, she knew something was wrong. She felt on fire, her eyes burned, her joints ached. Was she sick? Dear Creator, not now, she needed strength. When she felt the stabbing pain under her breastbone, she crossed an arm across her middle and slumped into a chair. She groaned as the room spun. What was the honey cake? It had never occurred to her that it could come this way. She had been wondering how one could overpower her. She was not without her Han, after all, and it was strong in her, stronger than nearly any other sorceress. How could she be so stupid? She doubled over in the chair with a searing lash of pain. In her wavering vision, she saw two figures enter the room. One short, one taller. Two. She hadn't expected two. Dear Creator, two could ruin everything.
Well, well. Look what the night netted me.
Struggling with the effort, Anne tilted her head up.
Who is it?
They stepped closer.
Don't you remember me?
The old woman in the blanket cackled.
Don't recognize me all old and wasted? Well, you're to blame for that. I must say, you look hardly a day older. I could still have my youth, were it not for you, my dear, dear prelate. Then you would recognize me.
Anne gasped as the twisting pain bore down on her.
Honey cake not setting well.
Who?
The old woman put her hands to her knees and leaned down.
Why, prelate, surely you must remember. I promised you that you would pay for what you did to me. And you don't even remember the cruel thing you did? Did it mean that little to you?
Anne's eyes widened in sudden recognition. She would never have recognized her after all these years, but the voice was the same.
Valdora!
The woman cackled again.
Well, dear prelate, I'm honored you would remember one so lowly as I.
She bowed with exaggerated courtesy.
I hope you also remember what I promised you. You do remember, don't you? I promised to see you dead.
Anne felt herself hit the floor as she writhed in agony.
I thought that after you reflected on your actions, you would see the wrong in your ways. I can see now that I was right to put you from the palace. You have no right to serve as a sister.
Oh, don't you concern yourself, prelate. I've started my own palace. My granddaughter here is my student, my novice. I teach her better than your sisters could ever teach. I teach her everything.
You teach her to poison people?
Valdora laughed.
Oh, the poison won't kill you. Just a little something to incapacitate you, until I could bind you up all helpless in a web. You'll not die so easily.
She leaned down closer, her voice coming like venom.
You are going to be a long time dying, prelate. You may even last all the way to morning. A person can die 1,000 times over in a single night.
How could you have known I would come?
The woman straightened.
Oh, I didn't. When I saw the Lord Rawl and he gave me one of your coins, I thought he might end up bringing me a sister, too. I had no idea, not in my wildest hopes, that he would bring me the prelate herself, delivered right into my hands. My, my, what a marvel. No, I never even dared hope. I would have been more than happy just to skin one of your sisters, or even your student, Lord Rawl, to do you a pain. But now I can fulfill my deepest, darkest desires.
Anne tried to call her Han. Through the layer of pain, she realized the honey cake had contained more than simple poison. It had been bound up with a spell. Dear Creator, this was not going the way it should. The room was getting dim. She felt a jerk of pain in her scalp. She felt the stone scrape along her back. She saw the pretty, smiling face of the girl walking along at her side.
I forgive you, child,
Anne whispered. And then the blackness smothered her. Chapter 39 Kaelin clutched Addie's arm in one hand and a sword in the other as they ran. In the darkness, they both stumbled over Orsk, falling hard. Kaelin yanked her hand back from the warm mass of his guts in the snow.
How could he be here?
Addie panted, trying to catch her breath.
It'd be impossible.
There's enough moon to see. I know we're not going in circles.
She took a quick swipe against the snow, smearing the gore from her hands. She scrambled to her feet, pulling Addie up with her. There were bodies, clad in red capes, scattered all about. They had had only one fight. There couldn't be other bodies. And Orsk.
Kaelin swept her gaze along the tree line, looking for the man on horseback. Addie, remember the vision Jebra had? She saw me going in circles.
Addie brushed the snow from her face.
But how?
Kaelin knew Addie couldn't run much more. She had used her power to fight, and she was near dead with exhaustion. The force of her magic unleashed had been a terror to the attackers, but there were too many. Orsk must have killed 20 or 30 by himself. Kaelin hadn't seen Orsk killed, but she had come across his body 3 times now. He had been cut nearly in two.
Which way do you think we must go to get away?
She asked the sorceress.
Maybe back there, Addie pointed. We must go this way.
That's what I think, too.
She pulled Addie the other way. We've been doing what we think we should, and it's not working. We have to try something else. Come on. We must do what we think is wrong.
It could be a spell, Addie offered. If it is, you be right. I be too tired to feel it, if there be one.
They charged through the bramble and down a steep slope, half running, half sliding down the snow. Before she bounded over the edge, she saw the horsemen spring from the cover of trees. The snow at the bottom was drifted into deep banks. They both struggled through them toward trees. It was like trying to run in a quagmire. A man suddenly came out of the night and drove down the slope after them. Kaelin didn't wait for Addie to try to use her magic. There was no time if she failed. Kaelin spun, bringing the sword around. The man in the red cape swept his sword up defensively as he plunged onward. He wore an armored breastplate. Her strike would be wasted on his armor. He was protecting his face, an instinctive reaction, but a fatal move against someone trained by her father, King Wyborn. Men in armor fought with false confidence. With all her strength, Kaelin took her sword low instead. It jolted to a halt when it hit his femur. The man, the muscle of his thigh cleaved, tumbled with a helpless cry to the trampled ground. Another man leapt over top of him toward her. His red cape sailed open in the night air. Kaelin brought her sword up, slashing the inside of his thigh, severing the artery. As he fell past her, she hacked his hamstring. The first cried out in panic. The second man cursed at the top of his lungs, calling her every vile name she had ever heard as he crawled ahead, brandishing his sword, provoking her to dare to fight him. Kaelin remembered her father's counsel. Words can't cut you. Ward only for steel. Fight only steel. She didn't waste the time to finish them. They would probably bleed to death in the snow, and even if they didn't, maimed as they were, they couldn't come after her. Clutching each other's arms, she and Addie fled onward into the trees. Panting in the darkness, they wove their way through the snow-crusted fir trees. Kaylin realized Addie was shivering. She had lost her heavy cloak at the very beginning. Kaylin pulled off her wolf-hide mantle and threw it around Addie's shoulders.
"No, child,"
Addie began to protest.
"Wear it," Kaylin commanded.
"I'm sweating, and anyway, it only slows my sword."
In truth, her sword arm was so weary she could hardly lift the thing, much less swing it. Only fright powered her muscles. For now, that was enough. Kaylin no longer knew which way she was running. The two of them simply ran for their lives. When she wanted to go right, she went left instead. The trees they ran through were too thick to see the stars or the moon. She had to get away. Richard was in danger. Richard needed her. She had to get to him. Zed should be there by now, but anything could go wrong. Zed might not make it. She had to. Kaylin slapped a balsam branch aside, struggling into a small open area of ledge, wind-blown nearly clean of snow. She started to a halt. Before her stood two horses. Tobias Brogan, the Lord General of the Blood of the Fold, smiled down at her. A woman in tattered scraps of colored cloth sat on a horse beside him. Brogan knuckled his mustache.
"And what have we here?"
"Two travelers," Kaylin said in a voice as cold as the winter air. "Since when has the Blood taken to robbing and butchering helpless travelers?"
"Helpless travelers? Hardly. The two of you must have killed over 100 of my men."
"We have been defending our lives from the Blood of the Fold, which, if it thinks it can get away with it, attacks people it doesn't even know."
"Oh, I know you, Kaylin Amnell, Queen of Galia. I know more than you think. I know who you be."
Kaylin's fist tightened on the hilt of the sword. Brogan stepped his big dappled gray closer, a gruesome grin overcoming his face. He rested an arm on the pommel as he leaned forward, his dark eyes holding her in their malevolent grip.
"You, Kaylin Amnell, be the Mother Confessor. I see you for who you be, and you be the Mother Confessor."
Kaylin's muscles locked tight, her breath held prisoner in her lungs.
How could he know that? Had Zed removed the spell? Had something happened to Zed? Dear spirits, if anything happened to Zed.
With a cry of rage, she brought the sword around in a mighty swing. At the same time, the woman in the tattered rags flung a hand out. With a grunt of effort, Addie cast out a shield. The blow of air from the woman atop the horse brushed past Kaylin's face, flicking her hair out. Addie's shield had saved her. Kaylin's sword flashed in the moonlight. The night air cracked as her blade sundered the horse's leg under Brogan. The horse screamed as it thudded to the ground, pitching Brogan into the trees. At the same time, a gout of flame from Addie enveloped the other horse's head. It reared wildly, throwing the woman whom Kaylin now knew to be a sorceress, too. Kaylin snatched Addie's hand and yanked her away. They scrambled desperately into the brush. All around, she could hear men and horses crashing through the trees. Kaylin didn't try to think where she was going, she simply ran. There was one thing she hadn't resorted to yet. She was saving her power as her last recourse. It could only be used once, and then would take hours to recover. Most confessors took a day or two to recover their magic. The fact that Kaylin could recover her power within a couple of hours marked her as one of the most powerful confessors to have ever been born. That power didn't seem like much now. One chance.
"Addie," Kaylin gasped, trying to catch her breath. "If you can, if they catch us, try to slow one of the two women."
Addie didn't need further explanation. She understood. Both the women chasing them were sorceresses. If Kaylin had to use her power, that would be the best use of it. Kaylin ducked at a flash of light. A tree beside them crashed down with a deafening roar. As the snow cleared in rolling clouds, the other woman, the one who had been afoot, marched forward. Beside the woman was a dark, scaled creature, looking half-man, half-lizard. Kaylin heard a cry come from her throat. It felt as if her bones wanted to jump out of her unmoving flesh.
"I've had quite enough of this nonsense,"
the woman said as she strode forward, the scaled thing at her side. Mriswith. It had to be Mriswith. Richard had described them to her. This nightmare creature could only be a Mriswith. Addie darted closer, casting sparkling light toward the woman. The woman flicked her hand almost indifferently, and Addie went down, the sparkle settling harmlessly to the snow. The woman bent, took Addie's wrist, and cast her away like a chicken for later plucking. Kaylin burst into action, diving forward with her sword. The thing, the Mriswith, swept before her like a gust of wind. She saw its dark cape billow open as it spun past. She heard the ring of steel.
She realized she was on her knees. Her empty sword hand tingled and stung. How could it move that fast? When she looked up, the woman was closer. Her hand came up, and the air shimmered. Kaelin felt a blow to her face. She blinked the blood from her eyes, seeing the woman lift her hand again, her fingers curling. The woman's arms suddenly splayed in the air as she was hit from behind by a mighty wallop. Addie must have used everything she had left. The invisible blast of magic from Addie, hard as a hammer, threw the woman forward. Kaelin caught her hand as she tried desperately to snatch it back. It was too late. Everything slowed in Kaelin's mind. The sorceress seemed to be suspended in midair, Kaelin gripping her hand. Time was Kaelin's now. She had all the time in the world. The sorceress began to gasp. She began to look up. She began to flinch. In the calm center of her power, her magic, Kaelin was in control. The woman had no chance. As Kaelin watched, she could feel the magic within, the confessor's magic, rip through every fiber of her being, screaming onward. In that timeless place of her mind, Kaelin released her power. Lightning without sound jolted the night. As the concussion slammed through the air, even the stars above seemed to stagger, as if a celestial fist had struck the great silent bell of the night sky. The shock shuddered the trees. A cloud of snow lifted, billowing outward in a ring. The impact of magic had knocked the Mrisswith from its feet. The woman looked up, her eyes wide, her muscles slack.
"Mistress," she whispered, "command me."
Men were crashing through the trees. The Mrisswith was staggering to its feet.
"Protect me."
The sorceress sprang up, spinning with a hand out. The night ignited. Lightning ripped through the trees in an arc. Tree trunks exploded as the twisting line of light sliced across them. Splintered wood spun through the air, trailing smoke. Men were no less naked before the rending violence than were the trees. Not so much as a scream escaped their lungs, nor would it have been heard above the pandemonium. The Mrisswith vaulted toward her. Scales, like the feathers of a bird hit by a rock from a sling, filled the air. The night roared with fire. The air was rife with flame, flesh, and bone. Kaelin wiped blood from her eyes, trying to see, as she scooted backward across the snow. She had to get away. She had to find Addie. She bumped into something. She thought it must be a tree. A fist snatched her by the hair. She reached for her power, realizing too late that it was gone. Kaelin spit blood from her mouth. Her ears rang, and then there was pain. She couldn't push herself up. Her head felt as if a tree had fallen on it. She heard a voice above her.
"Lunetta, put a stop to this at once."
Kaelin turned her head in the snow and saw the sorceress she had touched with her power seemed to grow bigger, to come apart. Her arms went in two different directions. That was all Kaelin could recognize as a cloud of red misted the air where the woman had been. Kaelin slumped into the numbing snow. No, she couldn't give up. She twisted up onto her knees, pulling her knife. Brogan's boot caught her in the middle. Looking up at the stars, she tried to draw a breath. She couldn't. Cold panic swept through her as she tried to get air. It wouldn't come. Her stomach muscles clenched in spasms, but she couldn't get a breath. Brogan knelt beside her, pulling her up by her shirt. Breath finally came in convulsing, coughing, choking pulls.
"At last," he whispered. "At last I have the prize of prizes. The keeper's most precious pet, the mother confessor herself. Oh, you have no idea how I've dreamed of this day."
He backhanded her across the jaw.
"No idea at all."
Kaelin labored for air as Brogan twisted the knife from her grip. She fought to keep her mind from going black. She had to remain conscious if she was to think, if she was to fight.
"Lunetta!"
"Yes, my lord general, I be here."
Kaelin felt the buttons on her shirt pop off as he ripped it open. She weakly lifted an arm to check his hands. He batted the arm away. Her arms felt too heavy to lift.
"First, Lunetta, we must take her before her power returns. Then we will have all the time we want to question her before she pays for her crimes."
He leaned closer in the moonlight, leaning a knee into her gut, holding her down. She fought to get air back into her lungs, but then it rushed out with a scream as his brutal fingers wrenched her left nipple. She saw the knife come up in his other hand. With wide eyes, she saw a white glimmer before Brogan's grin. In the moonlight, three blades poised before his bloodless face. Kaelin's eyes, along with Brogan's, turned to see two Mrisswith above them.
"Release her,"
the Mrisswith hissed.
"Or die."
Kaelin covered the piercing pain in her breast when he had done as he was told. Her eyes watered with the intensity of hurt. At least it helped clear them of the blood.
"What be the meaning of this?" Brogan growled. "She be mine. The Creator wishes her punished."
"You will do as the Dreamswalker commands, or you will die."
Brogan cocked his head.
He wishes this?
The Mrswith hissed confirmation.
I don't understand.
You question.
No, of course not. It will be as you advise, Sacred One.
Kaelin was afraid to sit up, hoping they would tell Brogan to let her go next. Brogan stood, backing away. Another Mrswith appeared with Addie, shoving her to the ground beside Kaelin. A sorceress's touch on Kaelin's arm said without words that she was all right, if bruised and cut. Addie put an arm around Kaelin's shoulders and helped her sit up. Kaelin hurt everywhere. Her jaw throbbed where Brogan had hit her. Her stomach ached, and her forehead stung. Blood was still running into her eyes. One of the Mrswith selected two rings from a number looped over its wrist and shoved them at the sorceress in tattered rags. Lunetta, Brogan had called her.
The other is dead. You must do it instead.
Lunetta looked puzzled, took the rings.
Do what?
Use your gift to put these around their neck so they can be controlled.
Lunetta pulled and one of the collars snapped, coming open. She seemed surprised, even pleased. Holding it out, she bent over Addie.
Please, sister, Addie whispered in her native tongue. I be from your homeland. Help us.
Lunetta paused, looking into Addie's eyes.
Lunetta! Brogan kicked her rump. Hurry up! Do as the Creator wishes!
Lunetta snapped the metal collar around Addie's neck, then shuffled over to Kaelin and did the same. Kaelin blinked at the childlike smile Lunetta gave her. Kaelin reached up after Lunetta straightened and felt the collar. In the moonlight, she thought she recognized it, but when she felt the smooth metal and could no longer find the seam, she was sure. It was a Radahan, like the Sisters of the Light had put around Richard's neck. She knew that those sorceresses used the collar to control him. The purpose must be the same for them, to control their power. Kaelin suddenly feared that her power would not be returning in a few hours. When they reached the coach, Ahern was there, at the point of a Mrswith blade. He had told Kaelin, Addie, and Orsk to dive out of the coach on a curve and he would lead their pursuers away from her, a bold and brave move that, in the end, had failed. Kaelin was suddenly relieved she had made everyone else go to Ebenicia as planned. Kaelin had told Jebra to care for Cirilla and the rest of the men to carry out their plans to bring Ebenicia back from the ashes. Kaelin's sister was home. If Kaelin died, Galea still had a queen. Had she brought any of those gallant young men, these Mrswith, these nightmare creatures of the wind, would have gutted them all, as they had done to Orsk. She felt a pang of sorrow for Orsk, and then a claw shoved her into the coach. Addie was pushed in right behind her. Kaelin heard a brief conversation, and then Lunetta climbed in the coach, sitting across from Kaelin and Addie. A Mrswith entered and sat beside Lunetta, its beady eyes taking account of them. Kaelin pulled her shirt closed and tried to wipe the blood from her eyes. She heard more talking outside, something about replacing the runners on the coach with wheels. Through the window, she saw Ahern at sword point climb up to the driver's seat. The man in the red cape followed him up, and then another of the Mrswith. Kaelin felt her legs trembling. Where were they taking them? She was so close to Richard. She clenched her teeth, holding back a wail. It wasn't fair. She felt a tear roll down her cheek. Addie's hand slid between their legs, and by its little movement against her thigh, she read the comfort in that touch. The Mrswith leaned toward them as its slit of a mouth seemed to widen in a grim smile. It lifted the three-bladed knife in its claw, giving it a little wiggle before their eyes.
Try to escape, and I will slice the bottoms of your feet.
It cocked its smooth head.
Understand?
Kaelin and Addie both nodded.
Speak,
it added,
and I slice out your tongues.
They nodded again. It turned to Lunetta.
With your gift, through the collar, seal their power, like I show you.
It put a claw to Lunetta's forehead.
Understand?
Lunetta smiled with comprehension.
Yes, I see.
Kaelin heard Addie grunt, and at the same time she felt something tighten in her own chest. It was the place where she always felt her power. In dismay, she wondered if she would ever feel it return. She remembered the forlorn emptiness when the Celtish wizard had used magic to make her lose the connection with her power. She knew what to expect.
She bleeds,
the Mrswith said to Lunetta.
You must heal her. Skin Brother would not be pleased if she were scarred.
She heard the whip snap and Ahern's whistle. The coach lurched ahead. Lunetta leaned forward to heal her wound. Dear spirits, where were they taking her? Chapter 40. Anne's eyes stung with tears as a shuddering cry escaped her throat. She had long ago forsaken her determination to keep from crying out. Who but the Creator would hear or care? Valdora lifted the knife, greasy with blood.
Hurt?
A gap-toothed grin came to her as a chuckle fought its way out.
How do you like it when someone else chooses what will happen to you? That's what you did. You chose how I would die. You denied me life. Life I could have had at the palace. I would still be young. You chose to let me die.
Anne flinched as the knife point pricked her side.
I asked the question, prelate. How do you like it?
No more than you, I would expect.
The grin returned.
Good. I want you to know the pain I've lived with all these years.
I left you with a life the same as everyone else has. A life to live as you would. You were left with what the Creator gave you, the same as everyone else come into this world. I could have had you executed.
For casting a spell? I'm a sorceress. That's what the Creator gave me, and I used it.
Though Anne knew the arguments were pointless, she favored them over Valdora going back to her silent knife work.
You used what the Creator gave you, to take from others what they would not have given willingly. You thieved their affections, their hearts, their lives. You had no right. You sampled devotion like candies at a fair. You bound them to you with glamours, and then cast them away to snare another.
The knife pricked her again.
And you banished me.
How many lives did you bring to ruin? You were counseled, you were warned, you were punished, still you continued.
Only after all this were you put out of the palace of the prophets. Anne's shoulders throbbed with a dull ache. She was stretched out naked on a wooden table, her wrists bound with magic over her head at one end, and her ankles at the other. The spell chafed worse than coarse hemp rope. She was as helpless as a hog hung up to be bled. Valdora had used a spell, something else she had learned, who knew where, to block Anne's hand. She could feel it there, like a warm fire on a winter's night, just beyond a window, inviting, promising warmth, but out of reach. Anne stared up at the window near the top of the wall in the little stone room. It was nearing daylight. Why hadn't he come? He should have come to rescue her by now. And then she was to somehow capture him, but he hadn't come. It still wasn't daylight. He still might come. Dear Creator, let him come soon. Unless it was the wrong day. Panic raced through her mind. What if they had miscalculated? No. She and Nathan had gone over the charts. This was the right day, and besides, it was the events, more than the day itself, that fueled the prophecy.
The fact that she had been captured said that it was the right day. If she had been captured a week before, then that would have been the right day. This day was within the window of opportunity. The prophecy was being fulfilled. But where was he? Anne realized that Valdora's face was gone. She wasn't beside her. She should have kept talking. She felt a sudden, sharp, searing pain as the knife cut down the sole of her left foot. Her whole body jerked against the restraints. Sweat once again beaded on her brow and trickled through her scalp. Again the pain came, another cut, accompanied by another impotent cry. Her screams reverberated from the stone as Valdora ripped a strip of flesh from the sole of her foot. She was shaking uncontrollably, her head lolled to the side. The little girl, Holly, was looking into her eyes. Anne felt tears run over the bridge of her nose and into her other eye to finally fall away. Trembling, she stared into Holly's eyes, wondering what vile things Valdora was teaching such an innocent child. She would turn this small creature's heart to stone. Valdora held up the little white curl of flesh.
Look, Holly, how cleanly it comes off if you do as I say. Would you like to try your hand, my dear?
Grandmama, Holly said, must we do this? She has done nothing to harm us. She is not like the others. She never tried to hurt us.
Valdora gestured with the knife for emphasis.
Oh, but she has, dear one. She hurt me. She stole my youth.
Holly glanced at Anne as she shivered with the lingering pain. The little girl had an odd mask of calm for one so young. She would have made an outstanding novice, and one day a fine sister.
She gave me a silver. She didn't try to hurt us. This is not fun. I don't want to do it.
Valdora chuckled.
Well, do it, we will.
She wiggled the knife.
You listen to your grandmama. She deserves it.
Holly coolly considered the old woman.
Just because you're older than me, that doesn't make you right. I'll watch no longer. I'm going outside.
Valdora shrugged.
If you wish. This is between the prelate and me. If you do not wish to learn anything, then go outside and play.
Holly strode from the room. Anne could have kissed her for her courage. Veldora's face glided closer.
Just you and me now, prelate.
Her jaw muscles flexed.
Shall we get?
She jabbed the knife point into Anne's side to punctuate each word.
Down to business?
She tilted her head to better look into Anne's eyes.
Near time to die, prelate. I think I'd like to see you scream to death. Shall we try?
Over there! Zed tried to point as best he could, confined as he was.
There's a light in the keep!
Though dawn was beginning to lighten the sky, it was still dark enough to pick out the yellow glow coming from several windows. Gratch saw what Zed was seeing and banked toward the keep.
Bags, he muttered. If that boy is already in the keep, I'll...
Gratch growled at Zed's obvious reference to Richard. He could feel the growl against his back pressed to the guard's chest more than he could hear it. Zed glanced to the ground far below.
I'll have to save him. That's all I meant, Gratch. If Richard is in trouble, I'll have to get down there to save him.
Gratch gurgled with satisfaction. Zed hoped Richard wasn't in trouble. The effort of maintaining the spell to make himself light enough for Gratch to carry him for the last week had sapped nearly all his strength. He didn't think he would be able to stand, much less use his power to save anyone. He would need days of rest after this. Zed stroked the huge, furry arms around him.
I love Richard too, Gratch. We'll help him. Both of us will protect him.
Zed's eyes widened.
Gratch, watch where you're going. Slow down!
Zed held his arms up before his face as the gar swooped down toward the rampart. Peeking between his arms, he could see the stone approach at alarming speed. He gasped as Gratch tightened his grip and flapped his wings, trying to halt their plummeting descent. Zed realized he was losing his grip on his spell. He was too exhausted to hold on any longer, and he was becoming too heavy for Gratch to carry. In desperation, he drew the spell back, like catching an egg rolling from the edge of a table. Just in time, he snatched the spell before it winked out and yanked it back. Gratch's flapping finally netted enough air to slow them, and he pulled up before they hit. With the graceful flutter of his huge leathery wings, the gar set them on the rampart. Zed felt the furry arms come off his sweat-soaked robes.
Sorry, Gratch. I almost lost my grip on the magic. I almost got us both hurt.
Gratch absently grunted acknowledgement. His glowing green eyes were searching the darkness. There were walls going everywhere up here, and 100 places to hide. Gratch seemed to be searching them all. A low growl rumbled in the gar's throat. The green glow intensified. Zed searched the dark recesses but saw nothing. Gratch did. Zed flinched when, with a sudden roar, the gar bounded into the darkness. Massive claws ripped at the night air. Fangs tore at nothing. Zed began to see shapes seeming to come out of the air. Capes billowed open, and knives flashed as the things danced and spun around the gar. Mriswith. The creatures let out clicking hisses as they lunged at the great fur beast. Gratch caught them on claws, ripping their scaled hides open, spilling their blood and insides. Their howls as they died drew a shiver up Zed's spine. Zed felt the air move as one swept past, intent on the gar. The wizard threw his hand out, casting a ball of liquid fire that caught the Mriswith, igniting its cape, and then spilled flame over the rest of it. The rampart was suddenly alive with the creatures. Zed, digging deep to bring up the power, snapped back a line of dense air, throwing several over the edge. Gratch threw one at the wall with such violence that it burst open when it hit. Zed wasn't prepared for the pitched battle that was suddenly all around him. Through his numb exhaustion, Zed's frenetic quest for ideas couldn't engender anything more ingenious than simple magic of fire and air. A Mriswith turned suddenly, bringing around its bladed claw. Zed threw a line of air as sharp as an axe. It cleaved the Mriswith's head. He used a web to snare several away from Gratch and cast them over the side of the wall. At this outer rampart, it was a drop of several thousand feet, straight down. The Mriswith, for the most part, ignored Zed, so resolute were they with taking down the gar. Why did they want so badly to kill the gar? By the way Gratch was dispatching them, it seemed they held a primal hatred for the winged beast. A wedge of light suddenly stabbed through the pre-dawn darkness as a door opened. A small figure stood silhouetted in the light. In the illumination, Zed could see the Mriswith all lunging for the gar. He rushed forward, throwing a fist of fire that engulfed three of the scaled creatures spinning forward with their knives flashing. A Mriswith hurtled past, slamming Zed's shoulder, knocking him from his feet. He saw the Mriswith pile into the gar, knocking him back against the crenellated wall. Zed saw them all, in one seething mass, tumble over the edge and fall into the night, just as his head hit the stone. The door squeaked open. As Veldora rose from her work, Anne gasped to catch her breath, and at the same time fought the darkness trying to shroud her mind. She couldn't do it any longer. She was at the end. She had no more screams left. Dear Creator, she could not hold out any longer. Why hadn't he come to rescue her?
Grandmama!
Holly grunted with effort as she labored to drag something inch by inch into the room.
Grandmama, something has happened!
Valdora turned to the girl.
Where did you find him?
Anne struggled to lift her head. Holly huffed and strained to lift a skinny old man up by his maroon robes and lean him against the wall. Blood trickled down the side of his head and matted his wavy white hair sticking out in disarray.
He's a wizard, Grandmama. He's near to dead. I saw him having a fight with a gar and some other creatures all covered with scales.
What makes you think he's a wizard?
Holly straightened, panting as she stood over the old man on the floor.
He was using his gift. He was casting balls of fire.
Valdora frowned.
Really? A wizard? How interesting.
She scratched her nose.
What happened to the creatures and the gar?
Holly wheeled her arms about as she described the battle.
And then they all jumped on the gar, and all of them fell over the side. I went to the edge and looked, but I couldn't see them anymore. They all fell down the mountain.
Anne's head thumped back to the table. Dear Creator, it was a wizard who was supposed to rescue her. It was all for naught. She was going to die. How could she have been so vain as to believe she could do something this risky and get away with it? Nathan was right. Nathan. She wondered if he would ever find her body to know what had happened, or would even care if his warden was dead. She was a foolish, foolish old woman, who thought herself more clever than she was. She had tampered with prophecy one time too many, and it had bitten her. Nathan was right. She should have listened. Anne flinched when she saw Valdora leaning over her with a wicked grin. She pushed the knife point up under Anne's chin.
Well, dear prelate, it seems I have a wizard to dispatch.
She drew the knife point across Anne's throat. She could feel it tugging at the skin, cutting and scratching as it dragged along.
Please, Valdora, ask Holly to leave the room. You shouldn't let your granddaughter see you kill someone.
Valdora turned.
You'd like to watch, wouldn't you, dear?
Holly swallowed.
No, Grandmama. She never tried to hurt us.
I've told you she hurt me.
Holly pointed.
I brought him in here so you could help him.
Oh, no, can't have that. He must die, too.
And what did he do to hurt you?
Valdora shrugged.
If you don't want to watch, then go. It won't hurt my feelings.
Holly turned, pausing a moment to glance down at the old man. She reached out and touched his shoulder in a comforting way and then hurried away. Valdora turned back. She laid the knife against Anne's cheek under her eye.
Should I gouge out your eyes first?
Anne closed her eyes, unable to witness the terror any longer.
No!
Valdora jabbed the point under her chin.
Don't close your eyes. You will watch. If you don't open them, I will gouge them out then.
Anne opened her eyes. She held her lower lip between her teeth as she watched Valdora put the point to her chest and lift the handle straight up.
At last,
Valdora whispered.
Vengeance.
She lifted the knife. It paused in midair as she pulled a deep breath. Valdora's body twitched as a sword blade erupted from the center of her chest. Her eyes widened, and she let out a gurgling squeal as the knife dropped to the floor. Nathan put a foot to Valdora's back and drew the sword out of the woman. She went down hard to the stone floor. Anne let out a wail of relief. Tears streamed from her eyes as the bonds holding her wrists and ankles broke. Nathan, tall and grim, gazed down at her lying on the table.
You foolish woman, he whispered. What have you let me done to you?
He bent and took her up in his arms as she wept like a child. His arms felt as sweet as the Creator's as he held her to his breast. As her crying slowed, he parted from her, and she saw that the front of him was soaked with blood, her blood.
Remove the block, and then lie back and let me see if I can possibly heal this mess.
Anne pushed his hand away.
No. First I must do what I came to do,
she pointed.
It is he, the wizard we've come for.
Can't it wait?
She wiped blood and tears from her eyes.
Nathan, I have gone through this dreadful prophecy this far. Let me finish, please.
With a disgusted sigh, he reached in a pouch beside his scabbard at his belt and pulled out a Radahan. He handed it over as she slid off the table. When her feet touched the floor, the pain crumpled her. Nathan caught her with a big arm and helped her to kneel before the unconscious wizard.
Help me, Nathan. Open it for me. She broke most of my fingers.
With trembling hands, she placed the collar around the wizard's neck. Pushing with her palms, she at last managed to snap it shut, locking on not only the collar but its magic. The prophecy was fulfilled. Holly stood in the doorway.
Is Grandmama dead?
Anne sagged back on her heels.
Yes, my dear child, I'm sorry.
She held out a hand.
How would you like to watch a healing instead of a hurting?
Holly gently took the hand. She glanced to the wizard on the floor.
And him? Will you heal him too?
Yes, Holly, him too.
That was why I brought him in, to be helped, not to be killed. Grandmama helped people sometimes. She wasn't always mean.
I know, Anne said. A tear rolled down the girl's cheek.
What is to become of me now?
She whispered. Anne smiled through the tears.
I am Annalena Alderin, prelate of the Sisters of the Light, and have been for a good long time. I've taken in many young women with the gift, like you, and have taught them to be wonderful women who heal and help people. I would be most happy if you would come with us.
Holly nodded, a smile coming to her tear-stained face.
Grandmama took care of me, but she was mean to other people sometimes, mostly those who would try to hurt us or cheat us. But you never did. It was wrong for her to hurt you. I'm sorry she wasn't nicer. I'm sorry she had to be mean and die.
Anne kissed the girl's hand.
Me too. Me too.
I have the gift.
She looked up with big, doleful eyes.
Can you teach me to heal with it?
It would be my honor.
Nathan picked up his sword and, with a dramatic flourish, slid it back into its scabbard.
You want to be healed now, or would you prefer to bleed to death so I could try my hand at resurrection?
Anne winced as she came to her feet.
Heal me, my savior.
He squinted.
Then allow me access to my power, woman. I can't heal with my sword.
Anne closed her eyes as she lifted a hand, focusing her inner sense on the Radahan, removing the block in the flow of his Han.
It is done,
Nathan grunted.
I know it's done. I can feel it back, you know.
Help me onto the table, Nathan.
Holly held her hand as she was lifted up. Nathan peered down at the wizard on the floor.
Well, you finally got him. Far as I know, one such as he has never been collared before.
His penetrating blue eyes turned to her.
Now that you've got a wizard of the First Order, the true madness of this whole plan of yours begins.
Anne sighed as his healing hands at last caressed her.
I know.
Hopefully, Verna has her end of matters well in hand by now.
Chapter 41
Zed gasped as his eyes popped open. He sat bolt upright. A big hand on his chest pushed him back down.
Take it easy, old man, a deep voice said.
Zed goggled up at the square-jawed face. His shoulder-length white hair fell forward as he leaned over, putting both hands to the sides of Zed's head.
Who are you calling old, old man?
The penetrating blue eyes, beneath an intimidating raptor's brow, smiled along with the rest of his face. It was a mixed visage Zed found unsettling.
Now that you mention it, I guess I am a bit older than you.
There was something familiar about that face. It came to him in a rush. Zed shoved the hands away and sat up, pointing a bony finger at the tall man beside the table.
You look like Richard. Why do you look like Richard?
His cheeks drew back with a wide smile. The brow was still looking very hawk-like.
He's a relative of mine.
Relative? Bags!
Zed peered closer.
Tall, muscular, blue eyes. Hair looks of similar texture. That jaw, worse, the eyes.
Zed folded his arms.
You're a Rawl, he pronounced.
Very good. You know Richard, then?
Know him? I'm his grandfather.
His brow elevated.
Grandfather?
He wiped his face with one of his big hands.
Dear Creator, he muttered. What has that woman gotten us into?
Woman? What woman?
With a sigh, he took the hand away from his face. The smile returned and he bowed. A rather good bow, Zed thought.
Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Nathan Rawl.
He straightened.
And may I have your name, friend?
Friend!
Nathan rapped his knuckles on Zed's forehead.
I just healed your cracked skull. That should count for something.
Well, Zed grumbled, perhaps you're right. Thank you, Nathan. I'm Zed. A talented bit of healing, if my skull really was cracked.
Oh, it was. I seem to get quite a bit of practice.
How do you feel? Zed took stock of himself.
Well, fine. I feel fine. My strength is back.
He groaned, remembering what had happened.
Gratch! Dear spirits, I have to get out of here!
Nathan planted a restraining hand on Zed's chest.
We have to have a little talk, friend. At least, I hope we can become friends. We unfortunately have a lot in common, besides being related to Richard.
Zed blinked up at the tall man.
Like what?
Nathan unbuttoned his ruffled shirt at the top. The whole front of him was covered with dried blood. Nathan hooked a finger through a dull silver collar around his neck and lifted it a bit. Zed's voice lowered to a somber timbre.
Is that what I think it is?
You're a pretty smart fellow, I've no doubt, or you wouldn't be of such value. Zed returned his gaze to the blue eyes.
And what unfortunate thing do we have in common?
Nathan reached out and tugged something at Zed's neck. Zed's hands shot up to feel the smooth metal collar. He could find no seam.
What is the meaning of this? Why would you do this?
Nathan heaved a sigh. Not me, Zed, he pointed. Her. A squat old woman with gray hair tied in a loose knot at the back of her head was walking through the doorway. She held the hand of a little girl.
Ah,
she said, as her fingers touched the top of the dark brown dress buttoned to her throat.
I see Nathan has you back to right. I'm so pleased. We were worried.
Is that so?
Zed said noncommittally. The old woman smiled.
Yes.
She looked at the little girl, stroking her straight, light brown hair.
This is Holly. She dragged you in here. She saved your life.
I seem to remember seeing her.
Thank you for your help, Holly. You have my gratitude.
I'm so glad you're healed, the girl said. I was afraid that Gar might have killed you.
Gar? Did you see him? Is he all right?
She shook her head.
He went over the wall with all those monsters.
Bags,
Zed whispered through his teeth.
That Gar was a friend.
The woman lifted an eyebrow.
A Gar?
Well, I'm sorry then.
Zed turned his glare on the woman.
What is this collar doing around my neck?
She spread her hands.
I'm sorry, but it's necessary for now.
You will remove it.
Her smile stayed where it was.
I understand your concern, but it must remain in place for now.
She folded her hands at her waist.
I'm afraid I haven't been introduced. What is your name?
Zed's voice came low and dangerous.
I am First Wizard Zedekus Zul Zarander.
I'm Annalena Alderin, prelate of the Sisters of the Light.
Her smile warmed.
You may call me Anne. All my friends do, Zed.
With his eyes locked on the woman, Zed hopped off the table.
You are not my friend.
She took a step back.
You will address me as Wizard Zarander.
Easy, friend, Nathan cautioned.
Zed turned a glare on him that closed his mouth and straightened his spine. She shrugged.
As you wish, Wizard Zarander.
Zed tapped the collar at his neck.
Remove this at once.
Her smile clung tenaciously to her face.
It must remain.
Zed began closing the distance between them. Nathan strode forward, apparently to restrain him. Without turning his eyes from the prelate, Zed lifted an arm, pointing a thin finger toward Nathan. The big man, his arms flailing, slid backward as if he were standing on ice in a gale, until he was flattened against the far wall. Zed lifted his other hand, and the ceiling lit, glowing with bluish light. As his hand lowered, a razor-thin plane of light, like the surface of a still lake, lowered, passing over them. Anne's eyes widened. The plane of light descended until it settled on the floor, turning it to a churning layer of boiling light. The light coalesced into points of brilliant intensity. From the points, lightning erupted. Crackling cords of white fire climbed the walls all around, filling the room with a pungent smell. Zed circled a finger and the lightning leapt from the wall to his collar. Flashes struck out at the metal. The room shook in sympathy with the dancing thunder. Stone dust filled the air. The table lifted and then exploded in a cloud of dust that was sucked into the streams of twisting light. The room quaked and groaned as huge blocks of stone loosened and began chattering out of their place in the wall. Through the fury of power, Zed realized it wasn't working. The collar absorbed the violence without breaking. He whipped an arm out, cutting the cacophony and light. The room rang in sudden silence. Enormous stone blocks hung halfway from the wall. The entire floor was charred and black, yet none of them were burned. Through his analysis of the prelate, the girl, and Nathan via the light bond, he now knew the exact extent of the power of each, their strengths and weaknesses. She could not have made the collar. It had been made by wizards, but she could use it.
Are you quite through? Anne asked.
Her smile was finally gone.
I have not yet begun.
Zed lifted his arms. He would channel enough power to level a mountain if he had to. Nothing happened.
That will be enough, she said.
Some of her smile returned.
I can see where Richard gets some of his fury.
Zed thrust out a finger.
You! You're the one who collared him!
I could have taken him when he was a child, instead of letting him grow up with your love and guidance.
Zed could count on the fingers of one hand the times in his life he had truly lost control of his temper, and worse, his reason. He was rapidly approaching the need to start counting on his other hand.
"Don't try to placate me with your self-righteous justifications. There can be none for slavery."
Anne sighed.
"A prelate, like a wizard, must sometimes use people. I'm sure you understand that. I regret having had to use Richard, and that I must use you, but I have no choice."
A wistful smile passed across her face.
Richard was a handful in the collar.
"If you think Richard was trouble, you have seen nothing yet.
Wait until you find out the trouble his grandfather will bring down on you."
Zed ground his teeth.
"You put one of your collars around his neck. You abducted boys from the Midlands. You have broken the truce that has stood for thousands of years. You know the consequences of such a transgression. The Sisters of the Light will pay the price."
Zed was standing at the brink of the abyss, at the brink of violating the wizard's third rule, yet he couldn't bring his reason under control. That, in fact, was the only way to violate the third rule.
"I know the consequences of the Imperial Order taking the world. I know you don't understand right now, Wizard Zorander, but I hope you will come to see that we fight on the same side."
"I understand a lot more than you think I do. You are aiding the Order through this. I've never had to make my allies prisoners to fight for what's right."
"Really? What would you call the Sword of Truth?"
Seething, he refused to argue with the woman.
"You will remove this collar. Richard needs my help."
"Richard will have to take care of himself. He's a smart boy. You are partly responsible for that. That's why I let him grow up with you."
"The boy needs my help. He needs to know how to use his power. If I don't get to him, he could come up into the keep. He doesn't know the dangers here. He doesn't know how to use his gift. He could be killed. I can't let that happen. We need him."
"Richard has already been up to the keep. He spent most of yesterday there, and he left unharmed."
"Once lucky," Zed quoted, "twice confident, and thrice dead."
"Have faith in your grandson. We must help him in other ways. There is no time to waste. We must be going."
"I'm not going anywhere with you."
"Wizard Zorander, I'm asking you to help. I'm asking you to cooperate and come with us. Much is at stake. Please, do as I ask, or I will be forced to use the collar. You would not like that."
"Listen to her, Zed," Nathan said. "I can testify that you won't like it. You don't have a choice. I understand how you feel, but it will be easier if you just do as she asks."
"What manner of wizard are you?"
Nathan stood a bit taller. "I'm a prophet."
At least the man was honest. He hadn't recognized the light bond for what it was and didn't know what Zed could read from it.
"And are you happy about being held in slavery?"
Anne laughed aloud. Nathan didn't. His eyes betrayed the composed, simmering, deadly fury of a Rawl.
"I assure you, sir, it is not by my choice. I've been railing against it most of my life."
"She may know how to subjugate a wizard who is a prophet, but she is going to find out just why I hold the rank of first wizard. I earned the rank in the last war. Both sides in that war called me the Wind of Death."
It had been one of the fingers he counted. Turning away from Nathan, Zed fixed the prelate with a look of such cold menace that she swallowed as she retreated a step.
"By breaking the truce, you have condemned any sister caught in the Midlands to death. By the terms of the truce, they have just been sentenced. Each of you has lost the right to trial or mercy. Any of you caught will be executed on sight without prejudice."
Zed thrust his fists into the air. Lightning laced from the clear sky, hammering the keep above them. A deafening howl rose, and a ring of light expanded outward, racing through the sky, leaving a trail of clouds like smoke from flame.
"The truce is ended! You now stand in enemy territory, an upwind of death! If you take me away by this collar, I promise you that I will go to your homeland and lay waste to the palace of the prophets."
Stone-faced, Prelate Annalena Alderin regarded him silently for a moment.
"Don't make promises that you can't keep. Try me."
A distant smile touched her lips.
"We really must be going."
With a grim glare, Zed nodded.
"So be it."